Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Hannah Pagel. Our guest this week is House Ag Appropriations Subcommittee member Ashley Hinson, who gives us an update on the government funding process. But first, here's this week's headlines. The St. Lawrence Seaway is back open. Action on the waterway stalled after 360 workers went on strike over a wage dispute. This was the first strike on the Seaway in 55 years. Specifics of the agreement were not released by the Canadian Union representing the workers, but the deal will be made public once ratified. President Biden kicked off his administration's two-week tour of rural America at a Minnesota farm. The president announced $5 billion worth of investments into rural infrastructure and conservation. Biden and several of his cabinet officials will visit more areas in the coming weeks to highlight efforts to bring more revenue to farms, expand rural broadband connectivity, and provide more economic development to rural areas. And finally, the House and Senate were back in action this week, and government spending bills were on the agenda in both chambers. The Senate is considering amendments to a package of three bills that contains the measures to fund USDA and the FDA. The House has yet to reconsider the ag funding bill after it was defeated on the floor in September. Lawmakers have until November 17th to avoid a government shutdown. Ashley Hinson is one of nine Republicans on the House Ag Appropriations Subcommittee, putting her in a key position to influence spending priorities for food and agriculture issues. She says the government funding debate is likely going to stretch beyond the next 2 weeks, and another continuing resolution is in play.
Well, obviously, there's a lot of negotiating that has to happen between now and then. And as I said, kind of when this happened at the September 30th timeframe, there are a couple of things that you can come to rely on every year at this time of year. You can rely on cold weather, football, and the potential for a government shutdown. So I think what needs to happen here is both sides realize we need a little bit more time to do our work. I think by the end of this week, we should have eight of the appropriations bills out of the House, which I think is a really good amount of progress. We're going to be back here next week, again, continuing that work. So we will need the time to conference these bills. And I think that our new speaker, Mike Johnson, very thankful that we have someone now leading our chamber again. But he has really expressed that we need to make sure we continue to have leverage to negotiate with the Senate and the Biden White House. And I think that the CR and continuing to do our work and pass our bills is going to be my top priority in the next couple of weeks.
So 2023 was supposed to be a farm bill year, and it's looking more and more like an extension is going to take place. Can you talk about what the prospects will be to getting a year-long farm bill extension included in the CR?
So I would say this, in addition to the government funding conversation, my top priority outside of that is delivering a strong farm bill for our Iowa producers. One of the first things that I did with a number of my colleagues after Speaker Johnson was elected was we sent him a letter. We said we absolutely need urgently to be able to get a farm bill across the floor for that stability, for those programs that our farmers know and trust and utilize. So we have expressed that to the speaker. I think it's very clear, and I'm on a working group where I'm in charge of kind of talking to my colleagues from Missouri, Iowa, obviously, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. And in having those conversations, it's very, very clear there is strong bipartisan support for the farm bill. GT, our chair, wants to have that on the floor sometime in December. I'm hopeful that we're able to get that done. If not, I think that there would be appetite, judging by what we've seen out of the last couple of extensions. I think there is appetite to do a shorter term extension. Maybe it is a year. I'm not sure what the time frame will be, but we absolutely need to make sure that those programs are in place. Obviously, again, that September 30th deadline came and went. While those programs are not expired yet, we understand the urgency and that December 31st deadline is approaching quickly.
If the farm bill does get extended into 2024, can you talk about how that could be impacted by the upcoming election cycle?
Well, I don't think we should be making our farmers political footballs. I think farmers should be empowered with, again, the tools that they need to help bolster American food and energy security. We need to focus on innovation. We need to focus on supporting rural America. And so my goal is to make sure that that doesn't become a part of the political sphere in 2024. So that's why if you look at maybe a potential for a one-year extension of the farm bill, it would take the election out of it, and it would make it just about being able to make sure we could get the work done. I would say this, that my perspective there would be, even if we have a one-year extension, our goal should be to get that passed as soon as possible, and then make sure that that's the policy that goes into place whenever we're able to get that done.
We'll be right back with more from Representative Hinson right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. Congresswoman Hinson sits on the House Ag Appropriations Subcommittee. Now that the House is back to moving along appropriations bills, Representative Hinson shares more about what an ag appropriations bill looks like.
Well, obviously, we passed, I think it's 10 out of 12 out of those out of our committee at this point. The Ag FDA appropriations bill was on the floor just a few weeks ago. I had to vote against it on the floor, unfortunately. The bill that we had passed out of our committee did cut wasteful spending at a lot of these agencies while still, I think, making the necessary targeted investments in agriculture. But the bill, when it came to the floor after the rule process, it really went beyond that in my mind, went beyond just redlining the waste. It really made cuts that would undermine rural America. So again, what I said about we should not allow this process to happen on the backs of farmers, I 100% believe that. And so I won't compromise when it comes to making sure we're making those investments in Iowa agriculture. So as far as next steps, we are continuing to work both with our colleagues here in the House and with our colleagues in the Senate, because we're going to need to have a final version of this legislation that really does put our farmers first. They are feeding and fueling the world, and we need to fund programs like rural broadband. So the bill that came to the floor reduced that by more than $38 million, too much in my mind. There were a number of other initiatives for health at USDA, tracking foreign purchases of agricultural land, for example. So those are all things that I think are priorities. And again, I'm hopeful we're able to get to a point where we have bipartisan agreement, bicameral agreement, and we can get that bill across the finish line too.
So last week, the House passed the Energy and Water Appropriations Bill, which promotes has a legislation in there to promote the GREET model. Can you talk a little bit more about how it will do that in relation to sustainable aviation fuel?
Well, we know that these administration officials need guidance. Our producers need certainty, and administration officials need to issue this guidance. So if there's one thing we've been hearing from folks, it's that we need to get moving on that stability. It's why we have supported the GREET model. I hear time and time again, our producers, again, when it comes to that certainty surrounding the tax credits and surrounding innovation and investment in sustainable aviation fuel, we need to get moving. So that's what our intent is, not only with this legislation. We've sent a number of letters to the administration officials I actually introduced a bipartisan amendment in committee urging the administration to adopt the GREET model, along with Representative Pocan, who spoke on it from Wisconsin. So it's great to see that there is good bipartisan support for moving forward with this. And again, this is about investment in long-term sustainability for our producers. Iowa farmers feed and fuel the world. And I think the next step for our farmers is to help support sustainable aviation fuel as well.
Well, there's a lot for us to keep our eye on in terms of appropriations in the Farm Bill. So with that, Congresswoman Hinson, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, and we'll keep working to get these priorities done for our farmers.
We'll be right back with our panel discussion. But first, our Quentin Slater takes a look at food insecurity in U.S. households in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
New numbers show food insecurity grew by a substantial margin last year, according to USDA's most recent Household Food Security in the United States report. This chart shows the percent of American households experiencing varying degrees of food insecurity from 2001 to 2022. The blue line represents the households that were food insecure. Nearly 13% of all American households qualified at some point in 2022, which is the highest rate since 2014 and the largest yearly increase since 2008. The green line focuses on households with very low food security, which increased to just over 5%. USDA defines very low food security as a situation where one or more people in these homes did not eat as much or had to eat differently because of what the household could afford. The rise in both categories corresponds with higher food costs due to inflation. Supermarket prices were up more than 11% last year. Our Jackie Fetka took a deep dive into the department's report on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Quentin Slater.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Excited to get into our panel discussion today, where we'll be talking all things appropriations, Farm Bill, and biofuels. Joined this week with T.A. Hawks with Monument Advocacy and Ann Steckel with the National Farmers Union. And T.A., my first question's to you. You know, we're now in the month of November. You know, on the 17th, the government is set to shut down unless Congress can come to a continuing resolution. From your standpoint and your experience, what's the appetite to get a CR passed? Because like the last time a House Speaker passed one, you know, he was voted out of leadership.
Right. Yeah. Well, there are challenges to any new leader. But I think the thing we've seen over the last few weeks is a real desire for government to function well. And I think, you know, we've seen lots of folks in the House and the Senate push their leaders to get bills done, both on the floor, as we've seen this week in the Senate, and in conference committees. The better thing is always to get bills completed and not have to do an omnibus. But I don't think there's a huge desire to shut down the government or to not pass the CR once November 17th comes. So I think over the next few weeks, what we'll see is Congress, the Appropriations Committee, and the leadership really get to work and, you know, bringing their own members along of their caucuses.
Do you have any insight on what or how long that extension might be for a continuing resolution timeline-wise?
Yeah, I mean, historically, we've usually seen that happen in December. I know that Speaker Johnson has really been pushing this week for extending that into January, which I think, you know, most appropriators want to get their work done before Christmas, but they also aren't just doing their work in a vacuum. So I think if January is the timeline that both Speaker Johnson and the Senate leadership believe, you know, he can get the votes to do, then I think that'll weigh heavily on their, you know, on the date that they choose. Fully understanding everybody wants to get things done between now and December, certainly, and certainly before the 1% across the board cuts kick in April. I think that would be a real mistake for Congress not to pass these appropriations bills before then.
So 2023 was supposed to be a farm bill year, but it's looking more and more like an extension is going to need to be made. What's the prospects of getting a year-long extension of the farm bill into a continuing resolution?
Well, I think there'd been a lot of hope that this fall the ag committees would be able to pass and take to the floors of the House and Senate their farm bills. And that obviously has run into lots of challenges for one reason or another. I think, you know, this bill behind me is the 2014 farm bill that I worked closely on, and that obviously was a product of an extension. So I think, you know, rather than not getting into a final passage, in January or February, I think they will likely have to include the extension in this next CR. I think that's probably the cleanest thing to do. Obviously, both Chairwoman Stabenow and Ranking Member Bozeman have pushed to include an extension sooner rather than later, just for certainty for the farm community, for folks who rely on USDA programs. And I think that's probably the right thing to do. And that doesn't preclude them from, you know, coming back in the new year, in the spring, and passing the bills. It doesn't mean they have to wait till September 30th of next year to do it. So I think that's probably the most prudent thing, is to pass an extension sooner rather than later.
And Anne, bringing you into the conversation here, the last time an ag appropriations bill made it to the House floor, it was defeated. What changes can you talk about that need to be made in order to prevent that from happening again?
Well, certainly we are trying to work closely with folks on Capitol Hill to ensure regular order occurs and that we can get these ag funding bills across the line. A lot of important programs are at stake, and we want to get that done in addition to the farm bill and a lot of the other priorities that the National Farmers Union has been working on, including biofuels. So I think it's been a difficult time in terms of Congress, in terms of actually doing a lot of legislating. So I think that we just have to keep working again with folks on Capitol Hill to talk to them about the importance of all of these farm programs and ensuring that they get sufficient funding.
We'll have more from our panel right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. Our conversation continues with NFU's Ann Steckel explaining what the GREET model is and how it's being used in the sustainable aviation fuel discussion.
So the National Farmers Union has been a big champion of sustainable aviation fuel. It really provides our agricultural feedstocks another place to go and another use in addition to on-road transportation fuel. And so I think that, you know, from our perspective, we've been working closely and ensuring that And there will be availability of agricultural feedstocks and sustainable aviation fuel. There are the two models that you mentioned, the GREET model and also the CORSIA model. And right now, the IRA did provide a tax incentive for sustainable aviation fuel, and they are going through the process of figuring out the best model. And so what we're doing is just talking again about the benefits of agricultural feedstocks in reducing carbon and ethanol, biodiesel, renewable diesel, and how they are used as a low carbon fuel. And that is, we're looking towards decarbonizing not only on-road fuel, but sustainable aviation fuel, that agricultural feedstocks need to be a part of that, and that the modeling needs to reflect the accurate changes that we are doing in our farming practices, such as no-till and things like that, which really reduce our greenhouse gas emissions and make our carbon scores even better.
So looking at the upcoming Farm Bill, what is NFU's priorities in relation to biofuels?
In terms of the Farm Bill in general, we're very hopeful that we get a Farm Bill done soon. There's a lot of important programs in the Farm Bill to the National Farmers Union, specifically biofuels focused. The energy title, the REAP program within the energy title, has been a priority for us. Ensuring sufficient funding continues for the energy title is really important. From the big picture Farm Bill perspective, ensuring that we have a competition title is really important. Competition has been kind of one of the most important issues for National Farmers Union. And I think we heard a lot of that messaging reflected yesterday when President Biden was in Minnesota speaking at a farm, a National Union, Farmers Union member farm, actually, talking about the importance of competition. So we do see a role for a competition title within the Farm Bill as well.
And TA, wrapping up our conversation with you, you know, if the Farm Bill is extended into 2024, can you talk about how the 2024 election cycle could impact passing a Farm Bill?
Sure, yeah. I mean, one thing is, like I mentioned earlier, you could take up a Farm Bill in the spring if you pass an extension. And one thing, you know, that leadership in both parties is going to have to figure out, and the members of the committee, and certainly the chairs and ranking members, is, you know, is there a political need and a desire by farmers and ranchers, landowners to pass a Farm Bill? I think there's been a lot of, you know, folks have camped out in their corners of priorities that they've got for the Farm Bill on the Hill, and there's not been a real drive to come to conclusion on some of those big policy disagreements, which you always have in a Farm Bill. I think if there's a political will and a political desire to get the Farm Bill done from hearing from farmers, ranchers, foresters, and others, then, you know, they'll have every reason to do that in the spring or summer of next year. But if it drags into the year and, you know, getting a Farm Bill done closer to an election might be harder, you could always come back after elections and pass a conference report if you're at that stage. But I hope they do it sooner rather than later. I think a lot of people who have been working this process through the last year and a half and longer really hope that too.
Well, there's a lot to keep our eye on in the next couple of weeks. TA, and thank you so much for joining us today. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, AgriPulse's Quentin Slater takes a look at the Farm Bill baseline in this week's Farm Bill Focus.
Regardless of when lawmakers pass the next Farm Bill, it's expected to be the first time the price tag tops $1 trillion. This chart shows the Congressional Budget Office's most recent estimates of projected Farm Bill spending over the next 10 years, also known as the baseline. The 2018 Farm Bill cost $867 billion when it was enacted. The next Farm Bill is expected to cost an additional $640 billion more, an increase of 74% in spending. The Farm Bill has 12 titles, and nutrition accounts for more than 82% of the bill's projected mandatory spending, which comes out to more than $1.2 trillion. The next biggest piece of the Farm Bill pie is the crop insurance title, which accounts for roughly 7% of spending. Commodity and conservation programs are both expected to total around 4 to 4.5% of funding. If you're interested in learning more about each Farm Bill title, check out previous episodes of AgriPulse Newsmakers and our coverage on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Quentin Slater.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The House and Senate will have 2 legislative weeks to avoid a looming government shutdown. Our Sarah Wyant will moderate a Wednesday conversation with several food and ag leaders in Washington. USDA's monthly crop production and world agriculture supply and demand estimates reports are released Thursday. And finally, next week's guest will be House Ag Committee Chairman Glenn Thompson. We'll ask him where things stand with the upcoming Farm Bill. As always, we'll have all the latest on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Hannah Pagel. Take care of yourself.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.